You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Plane touched down in Manila. People braved intense heat and waited for hours just to get a glimpse of Francis, the first pontiff to visit the Philippines in 20 years. On a somber note, street children as young as 5 were being caged in an attempt to clean up the streets ahead of Francis's visit. House Republicans approved legislation yesterday to overturn President Barack Obama's key immigration policies and expose hundreds of thousands of younger immigrants to expulsion. White House domestic policy advisor Cecilia Munoz says President Obama will wield his veto pen if this measure makes it to his desk.
This administration is going to continue to implement the executive actions because the president believes they are not only well within his legal authority, but they are the right way to fix what he can fix of our broken immigration system.
But House GOP leaders and most of their rank and file accused Obama of reckless and unconstitutional actions on immigration that had to be answered. A strip club on the northwest side of Chicago has received a neighborhood award for its efforts to improve the area. Albany Park neighbors decided this month to give one of 6 Blockstar Business Awards to the Admiral Theater. The group says the Admiral did a great job of tidying up during recent construction on the building's facade. This is USA Radio News. I'm Bob Kellogg.
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they'll live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their own terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Pat and Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within your reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services, Incorporated. Member FINRA and SIPC.
And before we get going, a brief check of the weather shows that for today, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 37 degrees and a low around 21. For tomorrow, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 37 and a bone-chilling 11 tomorrow night. For Saturday, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 30 degrees and a low of 20. And for Sunday, it'll be cloudy with rain on and off throughout the day and a high of 46 degrees with a low of 30. Currently in Flemington, New Jersey, it's 30 degrees. On today's program, I'll be talking about the 4 signs your prices could be too low, the 5 traits of high-achieving small business owners, why you shouldn't apologize to customers, how to win a price war without racing to the bottom, and the pros and cons of giving discounts. All this and more right now on Taking Care of Business.
And I'll be taking care of business.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jim Gannot, and when you hear the strains of Bachman-Turner Overdrive playing Taking Care of Business coming out of your speakers at Hunterdon Chamber Radio, that can only mean one thing. It's Thursday. It's a little after noon o'clock, and it's time for another edition of Taking Care of Business. So for the next hour, we're going to talk about issues affecting businesses large and small here in the borough of Flemington in beautiful Hunterdon County, New Jersey, and on the national scene as well. But first, we always get started with a check of the current financial markets. The Dow is down 58.28 to 17,368.81. NASDAQ down 39.95 to 4,603.37. S&P 500 down 9.24 to 2,002.03. Oil down a buck to $47.48 a barrel. Gold up $27 to $1,261.50 an ounce. everybody now. Woo! I just love that part. You can see me in my truck on Route 202 any given day if I have that CD in the player screaming, woo! Well, since we last got together last week, a pretty busy time. Had a meeting out near York, Pennsylvania in a town called Hanover. And what I later found out was that who knew that Hanover, Pennsylvania was the potato chip capital of the world, the home of Utz. And then on the pretzel side, Snyder's of Hanover Pretzels. So there I was in the potato chip capital of the world. And if my wife is listening, just want to let you know, I did not eat any potato chips. You know, just want to make sure that we're clear on that. But it was a great time. Went out there to meet with about 10 or 11 of the Crown Trophy stores from the Mid-Atlantic region. And it was just an opportunity for us. It's been about 6 months since our national meeting. So it was an opportunity for us to get together, share ideas, share what's working, what's not. If there's frustrations amongst the stores, we aired some of those. We learned a couple of tips and techniques from our host store owner, Doug Arnold, from Hanover. And really, it was just a great chance for us to get together and kind of recharge your batteries. And the last week, I had the kickoff meeting with my staff, and that kind of set the goals and the tone for the year. But there's 12 months in a year, and we were only in week number two. So here in week number three, it was time to get in with the stores and find out, you know, how have you been since the summer meeting? How did you finish out the third and fourth quarter? What are you forecasting for this year? So it was great to get together with that. And then went out to dinner with a couple of friends and had a great time there, just, you know, getting caught up on what's going on in their lives as well. So Tuesday was great. Other than the long drive, 3 hour drive there, 3 hour drive back. It's been a while since I've had that much seat time. But it was just great to get out there and share those ideas and conversation. Now, over the past 6 months to a year, a lot of people have been coming up to me and saying, "Hey, Jim, read your first book, loved it. When are you coming out with your second book?" And I would always tell them, the book is written. I've got to edit it down and make sure it's the way I really want it. We have to design a cover. And one of the things I think that held me back was that the gentleman who designed the first cover of my first book was a close friend of mine. He lived about two houses down the road from me. Well, he passed away a few years ago. And so trying to find somebody that could fill Jim's shoes was kind of hard for me, you know, because he got it. We talked about the concept. He did a beautiful job on the cover and, you know, didn't charge me a dime for it, which that didn't matter. He was just a great friend. And so when he died tragically, you know, of a massive heart attack, it just shook me to the core. And even though the book was pretty much almost finished, I stopped writing for a while, didn't care about cover design or anything like that. And so I just kind of put it on the shelf. And now a lot of people are coming up to me and saying, "I want to read book two. I want to read book two." So the good news is that we went out to dinner New Year's Eve with some friends, and one of the friends was very persistent with me. And she was like, "You know, enough talk. You told me last year the book was done. Now you got to, you know, release it." So I'm very excited that this weekend, hopefully, I will be able to see some cover designs. Found a new graphics guy, and you've heard me talk about him here on the show, Russ Zaborowski. So he's working with me to create the cover, and looking forward to his work and hopefully getting together for dinner to go over those. And it's just more of a comfort level. You know, I was comfortable with Jim, and I'm comfortable with Russ. And I put a lot of emphasis on the trust. Like, do they get it? So it's not to scare you, Russ, but do they understand the concept? Does the cover, if a person put the book down for a week or two and they came back and they read it, would they look at the cover and say, that's what this story means? So hopefully we have that right, and I will let you know next week. So getting into the program here, a lot of stories have been coming out, and I think every time you start the new year, there's always this flood of information. You're looking at fourth quarter end results. You're looking at all kinds of different information as far as forecasting and things like that. But I'm trying to stay away from that a little bit because, like yesterday, I was reading an article that said the nine businesses that won't be around in 2015. And, you know, sure enough, Sears was there. And I think Sears has made the list every year that I've had a show, but they seem to find a way to survive. Maybe not thrive, but they find a way to survive. It'll be announced next month that Radio Shack is going to be filing for bankruptcy. That's another store that for the past 4 or 5 years has always been on this watch list, and the stores never change. Best Buy is always one of them. And I'm like, it's either they're trying to get lucky with their forecast, or we're just incredibly stupid and forget, or these are the only 9 or 10 businesses that are destined for failure, but it's just a slow, painful death. So we'll have to see how that goes. So what I'm looking for this year, and you can feel free to, if you have suggestions, please email me, trophyjim@yahoo.com. Send me a text or something like that saying, hey, can you look into this? We've gotten some great feedback this year. But what I'm looking for is business tips, insights that maybe the average business owner doesn't necessarily look at. And I found one a few days ago, 4 signs that your prices are too low. Now, there are some telltale clues that your small business could charge more and make more. Now, lower may be better in a game of limbo, but not when it comes to your business prices, says Scott Carell, who's a sales trainer and pricing consultant who calls himself Mr. Charge Higher Prices. Based in Southern California, he's built a career helping companies raise their prices and, along with that, their profits. Now, he shares 4 warning signs that your price is not right, the first of which is that you have more business than you can handle. Now, one of Sorrell's clients, a freelance marketing consultant and search engine optimization expert, faced this dilemma several years ago when he found himself working until 2 in the morning most nights and still barely able to make ends meet. By raising his prices from $500 to $2,500 per client, he doubled his income working with half as many clients, and today he enjoys shorter work days and more time with his family. Now, you face constant criticism from clients, even though you know your work is solid. That would be the second one. If your clientele is full of complaining, demanding lowballers instead of polite and grateful customers, then your prices are too low, according to Sorrell. Now, contrary to logic, low-end customers worry that showing you appreciation and gratitude might convince you that your product is so good that you should raise your prices. So instead, they complain to try to fool you into believing that you're worth very little. The third is you only offer one version of your product or service. Now, if your business doesn't offer at least 3 price points, Sorrell says, you're missing out on extra earnings. If you add an enhanced higher-priced item to your product or service lineup, plus an even more deluxe item at the top, typically most customers will be influenced toward your middle item, and some even to the premium item, he says. Come up with at least 2 expanded versions of what you sell and add features, benefits, or services. Putting that in Crown Trophy terms, most times, most awards, we have 3 different sizes. And very often, he's right on the money there, most people will go to the mid-range. They look at the small price item, which is still a beautiful award. They look at the big one. They say, well, this one's too, it's kind of like the 3 bears. This one's too soft. This one's too hard. And in this case, this one's too small. This one's too big. This one's just right. And finally, you haven't tested your prices. Now, if you haven't run any pricing experiments, you're probably charging too little. Customers are almost always willing to pay more than you believe they are. We asked this question at the Crown Trophy meeting of 10 stores the other day. I asked everybody, how many people get the question when you tell the customer the price, they go, that's it? And at that point, you have to wonder, what would they be willing to pay? And feel free to ask the customer that. What do you perceive as the value of this? Now, I'm not saying that on every piece you're going to sit there and raise your prices to what your customer says, but at least you'll understand this is what the market will bear. Price testing techniques vary depending on the industry, but for retail companies with multiple locations, a frequent practice is charging different prices for the same product at different stores and then comparing the sales figures. For service-oriented businesses, quote different prices to different customers, as long as these customers aren't friends, colleagues, or networking partners. Otherwise, they may compare notes and get upset. What you want to find out is the price point where you finally start getting resistance, Sorrell says. And that's not the point where you back off. That's the point where you learn how to actually sell. Currently 12:15, you're listening to 100inchamberradio.com. The program is called Taking Care of Business. We're going to step away for a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the 5 traits of high-achieving small business owners.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hello, this is psychic medium Trish Woods with the program Afterlife Real Life that airs every Thursday from 1 to 3 p.m. My co-host is psychic medium Jane Davidson from the United Kingdom. We have listeners and callers from all over the world. We're looking forward to hearing what you want to know about with metaphysics, spirituality, personal spirit experiences, psychic work, and more. From 1 to 3 p.m. every Thursday, you can call in or tune in, asking Jane and I your questions, your personal ideas, and maybe getting help with your own personal life. Afterlife Real Life, every Thursday, 1 to 3 p.m.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site, and we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
Hi, I'm Pat Smits, Law Offices of Patricia Garrity Smits, LLC. The Hunterdon Chamber is a great resource to find the best local business people and meet new friends.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Hi, this is Joe Peters at Weikert Realtors. If you are considering buying or selling a house this year, you have probably already gathered a lot of information. In a way, that is a little like taking a drink of water out of a fire hose in that you're no longer thirsty and at the same time are a little overwhelmed by all of the information that you have found. This is where I can be of help. As a local real estate market specialist, I can help you by understanding your objectives, showing you how to assemble that information that you've already found, supplementing it with highly accurate and timely data that I have access to, and assisting you in developing a strategy to turn your objectives into reality. Let's start by spending a few minutes over the telephone. Please give me a call at 908-238-0118 to get that process started. If you are considering buying or selling a house this year, we should be talking now. Once again, this is Joe Peters at Weikert Realtors at 908-238-0118. And you could also visit my site at my first initial J, my last name, Peters.com.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. And just before the break, I teased you with a little story about how there's five traits of high-achieving small business owners. So let's get into them right now. So whether you're just getting started or looking to expand your business, you can learn from the most successful small business owners. Todd Rode, who's the managing director of BT Consulting in Atlanta and a career consultant for high achievers, is going to share his five traits that he sees in the most successful business owners. Number one is they focus on their strengths. Now, Rhodes says one of the biggest mistakes he sees business owners make is spending a lot of time learning new skills without fully utilizing them. The high achievers take a lot of risk, but it's always within the range of what they're good at. We all saw what happened when Michael Jordan tried to play baseball. He wasn't successful at it because that wasn't where his talent was, Rhodes says. By focusing on your strengths, you can better utilize your talents and maximize your successes, he says. They also surround themselves with high achievers. As a business owner, you have to get really good at networking, Rode says. If you want to be a highly successful person, you need other highly successful people around you. In the beginning, these people can serve as mentors. As your business grows, your network will provide support and help you fill in the gaps in your own knowledge. Lots of small business owners have the attitude of, if I'm not doing this myself, it's not rewarding. And that's an attitude people have to learn to get over. If you want to reach these goals, you need other people to get there. And you can't do it alone, Rode says. Number three, they consider failure just to be a lesson. Now, according to Rode, risk is necessary to succeed, and fear of failure holds many business owners back. High achievers don't worry about it, he says. Almost every billionaire out there was broke at some point. You have to keep taking those risks, and you have to talk to enough people to understand these things happen and that it's required to get there. Failure is just a part of it. Number four, they have a plan. If you want your business to grow, you have to think about the big picture, Rhodes says. If you stop your plan for growth, you're going to stop growing, he says. He says setting goals and looking beyond your bottom line are crucial. You have to be setting goals not just for your finances. The branding, the marketing, the social media strategy all contribute to your bottom line. If you're weak in one area, it's going to affect your bottom line. And finally, fifth, they constantly assess their performance. Rhodes says the most successful business owners set metrics, and they also evaluate whether their efforts are worthwhile. Your assessment has to be realistic, so take a look at what you're doing and the effort that you're putting into it and ask if it makes sense. When something isn't working, smart business owners adapt. Recognize when something is wrong and fix it, but don't quit. Work harder. That reminds me of the book I read a few years ago called If It Ain't Broke, Break It by Dr. Robert Kriegel. And I've mentioned this book several times on the show, but it's so relevant. And in talking with some of the other store owners the other day, what was evident was that many of them are doing business the same way that they did it 5 and 10 years ago in some cases. And the problem is that your competition is thinking of new ways to do business, new ways to market. If there's hesitancy in jumping into social media, well, you can bet that you're missing an entire market segment, because the kids who are now in their 30s, this is all they know, is computers and handheld devices. So you have to make sure that you're adapting with the times. And it may be uncomfortable at first. You may not understand what a Twitter is. You may not understand what a Facebook or a LinkedIn is. But these are the tools that everybody's using, and there's many more out there that you're going to need to have some working knowledge of. Now, why shouldn't you apologize to customers? Now, small business owners have the natural instinct to ensure their employees and customers have the best possible experience working for or doing business with their companies. Now, of course, that experience won't be positive for everyone. A negative experience can result in a complaint from an employee or a customer, or in extreme cases, even a lawsuit. Now, whether they're facing sexual harassment allegations, workplace injuries, or customer service complaints, small business owners should choose their words carefully and map out a strategy to deal with apology-inducing situations. So here are some tips owners can use to handle apologies and help avoid a lawsuit. Number one, empathize with the affected party. Avoid admitting guilt to a particular situation by issuing an apology. A better approach is to empathize with the person, says Richard Dizio, an attorney in Alexandria, Virginia. For example, you can say, I'm sorry to see that you got injured. Be helpful with the person. Be empathetic, but don't say, this is our fault. Number two, focus on solving the problem. Business owners often subscribe to the adage, the customer is always right. So if a customer calls with a complaint, it's human nature for an owner to apologize for the alleged mistake or error almost immediately, says Jim Balthasar, who's a partner in Thompson Hine LLP in Columbus, Ohio. Instead of apologizing, Balthasar says owners should focus on the issue and find a way to solve the problem. He advises owners to shy away from statements such as, I made a mistake, or something was done wrong. Instead, they should say, how do we address this situation that we now face so that we come to a mutually agreeable solution? Number three, avoid confrontation. And I'm going to parentheses this and just say, at all costs. Owners should pay attention to the way they communicate with the affected party after an incident occurs or a complaint is made. If in handling the situation your tone is confrontational rather than positive and customer service oriented, the individual is likely to react in a negative way, possibly by threatening to sue. If you make the customer feel better about the situation and let them see that you're trying to help them, you'll get less of a negative reaction from that person, Dizio says. So just a couple of points on why it's important not to just rush into the apology with a customer. And it's 1226 here at 100 in Chamber Radio. You're listening to Taking Care of Business. And got a bunch of stories that I want to get to today. So we're going to probably step away for an early news break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about how to win a price war without racing to the bottom. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100inChamberRadio.com.
This is USA Radio News. I'm Bob Kellogg. The Obama administration is putting a large dent in the U.S. embargo against Cuba as of Friday, significantly loosening restrictions on American trade and investment, according to the Washington Post. The new rules also open up the communist island to greater American travel. Three suicide bombings by girls aged as young as 10 suggest that Nigeria's Boko Haram has employed a new tactic of forcing abducted children to blow themselves up, according to the experts. Ravina Shamdasani of the UN's Human Rights Agency.
The killings at marketplaces in Maiduguri, also in Borno State, and in Potiskum in Yobe State, are particularly shocking, given reports that girls, possibly one as young as 10, may have been forced to carry out the attacks.
Amnesty International calculates that 3,700 homes and buildings were demolished and hundreds killed just this month alone. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Are you tired of having more month left over at the end of the money? Then you might want to consider a home-based business. On average, a home business household earns nearly twice as much money, and you don't have to fight traffic. Hi, how in the world are you anyway? This is Andy Willoughby with the 3-Step Plan Home Business System. Building a home business could help you get out of debt, improve your lifestyle. Why, you might even be able to save some money for a change. For information, go to 3stepusa.com or call 800-480-2102. There are thousands of people all over the nation using the 3-Step Plan to make money from home. Some are working for just a few extra dollars each month so they don't have to worry about money all the time. Others are building huge businesses that earn thousands upon thousands of dollars and are getting their share of the American dream. To find out how you could make more money working from home, go to 3stepusa.com or call 800-480-2102. That's 800-480-2102.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100inChamberRadio.com. I'm Jim Gano. I'll be with you for the next half hour as we continue to talk about issues affecting businesses large and small here in Flemington, New Jersey, and on the national scene as well. Taking a look at the weather, it's currently 30 degrees at 1229. Today it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 37 degrees and a low around 21. For tomorrow, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 37 and a bone-chilling 11 tomorrow night. Two blanket or two puppy weather. And for Saturday, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 30 degrees and a low of 20. And for Sunday, it'll be cloudy with rain on and off throughout the day and a high of 46 degrees with a low of 30. Well, before the break, I mentioned a little teaser to our next story, which was how to win a price war without racing to the bottom. Now, have you ever seen businesses where you can tell that they're in some form of a price war with a competitor? It could be a gas station. And, of course, in this day and age right now, it's not really a price war. It's just low prices. But back when gas was at like $3.50 a gallon, how many of you would drive down the highway and see one station at $3.50 and then, you know, you go down the road and you think you might see lower prices, and then you see that it's $3.56. I've heard people tell me they would drive 10 miles out of their way and then go back to the station with the $3.50 gas. One time, just because I didn't even believe that it was possible, I had gone down, and this was back just a few months ago when gas was coming from like the $3 range into like the $2.95 territory. And I drove all the way down to Costco in North Plainfield and filled up for $2.95, saved a ton of money. It's only, you know, 7 miles from my house, but I felt great because I was saving money. Today I see signs for $1.86 in gas. But that's not really a price war. The price war that I'm talking about is when two competitors try to kill each other with price. And I'm actually watching one in my industry, in the sign industry, where I have two sign stores that are competing against each other, and I refuse to join the fray. And I may get less business as a result, but I am not going to lower my prices so much that when one of them loses and or both of them loses, that suddenly I'm left with the lowest price store. So I'm going to let them fight it out. And then when one of them goes away, you know, I'll still come back. You have to set your business apart from competitors, but without giving away the farm. Now, if you've long thought that the best way to differentiate your small business from your competitors is to offer customers the lowest prices, well, you might want to think again. At least that's the word from two in-the-know experts, business coach Pamela Bruner and Becky McCray, an author, speaker, and co-owner of a liquor store and a cattle ranch, both of whom suggest that lowballing usually isn't the best strategy for success-minded businesses of any size. In a race to the bottom, you usually lose, says Bruner, who adds that at best such efforts end up attracting bargain basement customers, which are not usually what you want. They tend to be less loyal to your business. McCray's advice on the competition is don't underprice them, over-deliver them. She adds that one of the many lessons her 20 years of entrepreneurial experience has taught her is that trying to compete by undercutting prices is a losing proposition. The only exception McCray can envision, if the competition you are trying to come in under is at the top end of the market and you just want to slide into the slightly less expensive position, that can be a fine place to be, but you have to over-deliver on service to make it work. You have to also find the pricing sweet spot. Now, of course, finding that sweet spot when it comes to pricing your business's goods and services can be easier said than done. Big business may have a fleet of MBAs to analyze the perfect pricing point, but small business ends up making a wild guess, admits McCray. Then that guess becomes something you just have to live with. And that's because it isn't easy for a business to alter its prices. It's tough to adjust customers' thinking to your new prices, she says, and it's tough to make yourself make a major change like a pricing overhaul. If you're going to try to fight on price, make sure you have the numbers and that you let yourself make smart decisions. Another of McCray's suggestions related to pricing, it pays to know industry benchmarks. Your retail segment has an average or benchmark for pricing, she says, which can be found by using the industry averages for gross margins. And you can get that at www.retailowner.com/benchmarks. Knowing the gross margin lets you figure the average cost paid for merchandise and the usual amount of markups on items, McCray explains. And if you don't know those numbers, don't even try to engage in a pricing battle. And I went to that retailowner.com the other night. I looked up sporting goods because I felt that that would be closest to the trophies. And it was it's very good information there in a number of different business segments when it talks about profit margins, cost of goods, things like that. So definitely if you're in retail, it's worth a shot. Again, it's www.retailowner.com/benchmarks. It also pays to have excellent financial records, she says. McCray shares the story of a small business owner who sells pricey farm storage bins. He always wanted to make people a deal, give them a discount, and at the same time, he kept a very messy office. By the time he got everything in order, he could see what each storage bin actually cost him to manufacture, and suddenly he was less interested in giving every farmer a discount. The moral of that particular story, according to McCray, is that if you're going to try to fight on price, make sure you have the numbers that let you make smart decisions. Now, regardless of whether you decide to take the high road or the low road in terms of pricing, both Bruner and McCray suggest that you not focus solely on that aspect of your business. Focusing on pricing alone is a very poor way to try to make your business successful, stresses McCray. Instead, think of pricing as just one of the tools. Think about your appearance, your service, your selection, your willingness to customize, your knowledge of the product, and your connection to the community. Pricing is just a piece of the puzzle, adds Bruner. You also need marketing, a clear and strong message, great sales skills, and more. Excellent tips from both of those ladies, and I'm hoping that maybe my two competitors that are currently engaged in a price war will think about that before they just continue to slash their prices. Now, along the lines of getting into the pricing war is the pros and cons of giving discounts. Now, customers will ask for discounts for reasons ranging from paying cash to placing a large order to seeing the product cheaper elsewhere. So it's a good idea to give into their demand. Is it a good idea to give into their demands or not? So let's take a look at the pros and cons before you actually decide. Now, the pro is making the sale when you wouldn't otherwise. In some circumstances, making a discounted sale is better than making no sale at all. Now, if it seems clear that a customer will go elsewhere unless you give it into a request for a discount, ask yourself how badly you need that particular sale. One large sale, even when discounted, can sometimes be the difference between a profitable month and an unprofitable one. The con is that you're cutting your profit margins. Anytime you sell your product or service for lower than your asking price, your profit margin goes down. If you can hold out, you might be better off waiting for a customer who is willing to pay full price. Another pro would be building stronger client relationships. Granting your customers the discount they request will certainly improve their loyalty to the store. But next time they want to make a purchase, they'll hopefully return. Not only can giving discounts create return business, it can also generate positive word of mouth and build your reputation as a community-minded business owner. A con to that is that you're setting up a harmful precedent. Even if you tell customers the discount is a one-time occurrence, they may ask for one the next time as well. And if you refuse, their loyalty to your business might prove fleeting. Only give a discount if you don't mind being asked for more deals in the future. Another pro would be a few discounts won't hurt the bottom line. Rewarding loyal customers here and there certainly won't cut that deeply into your bottom line. In fact, giving discounts could even strengthen it by promoting returning business and sending new clients your way. The con to that is that customers may compare prices. If some of your loyal customers who aren't getting a discount talk to a customer who is, they will wonder why they haven't received the same courtesy. These clients might demand a concession the next time you see them, and you will be forced to comply or else risk losing their business. Many people enjoy sharing the news when they get a good deal. Don't imagine that your clients will be an exception. And one of the best ways for business owners to solve the discount dilemma is to set up a unified discount program. For example, you could give all customers 10% off on orders totaling more than a certain amount of dollars. Having a pre-existing discount program allows you to treat all customers fairly and saves you from having to make markdown decisions on a case-by-case basis. So some very good arguments there, pros and cons, on when to give discounts. And I remember a few years ago, one of our stores, when we got into the sign business, was suggesting that I offer a 50% discount on first sign orders. And I told him no. And he said, well, why not? Don't you want to get business in the door? I said, yeah, I want to get business in the door. But if I devalue the goods by 50%, I will never be able to raise my prices by 50%. 10% maybe. But again, I don't want to necessarily just start out, you know, saying that I'm devaluing my business by 10 or 20%. Now, here's 11 fantastic productivity tricks that you can use to help yourself be a little bit more productive in 2015. You want to achieve the most important goals in your business and in life faster and better than ever. We all have important things to get done at work, but far too often at the end of the day, we realize that we haven't accomplished what we set out to do. The problem is that for all sorts of different reasons, we end up doing things that don't help us meet our goals. The solution is to focus on the most important things and then to stay on task. That, of course, is much easier said than done. So here are 11 productivity tricks that will help you stay on task and accomplish those goals that will move you forward at work and in your career. Number one, edit down your to-do list. So if you've got a to-do list with 15 or 20 items on it, chances are you're going to feel overwhelmed and not get much of it done. Edit down your list to 3 or 4 most important things you need to do. Then focus on just those items until you've completed them, and then add more items to the list. Redesigning your list, get away from the usual upper left-hand corner or linear list of to-dos. Instead, write each task on a sticky note or page flag. Then place your most pressing task in the center of a piece of paper, surrounded by a circle of other tasks you need to complete as well. Give yourself less time. You've created your list for the day, and now you're sitting there thinking about anything but getting started. So challenge yourself. Give yourself only until noon to accomplish everything on your list. There's a couple of great productivity apps on the smartphones. I think they're called task timers. And basically, like setting a countdown clock, if you allow yourself an hour to get something done and you put a timer on it, you're kind of working against the clock and still getting the task done. That's okay if you have control of the product or the project. If you're handing this project into your boss and you just want to get it done by 11 o'clock, make sure the work is still good, not just that it's something you're checking off on your list. Get rid of the dead weight. If your company is making a line of products, get rid of those that aren't working or aren't your biggest sellers. Focus your attention on those products that do work and do sell. The same principle extends to your life. Quit saying yes to everything. Save that yes for things that will actually enhance your life or career. Number 5, entrust others. Stop trying to do it all yourself. Delegate tasks to others and make them responsible for their completion so you can focus on the work that is most important to you. And number 6, trust yourself. We are humans, not machines. If you're feeling unproductive, switch gears and go for a walk or change your setting. Trust that your productivity will return to full throttle once you've given yourself a little time off. Number 7, borrow some productivity boosters of the famous. Productivity can go through the roof when some subtle changes or different habits occur. Try one of these quirky ideas from some of the greats. Maya Angelou was more productive working in a nondescript room than in a beautiful setting. Ernest Hemingway was most productive in a standing position. And Woody Allen has found his productivity through multiple showers a day. Number 8, keep experiencing and learning. The more experiences you have and the more you learn, the greater your judgment and creativity when coming up with solutions to a problem will be. So keep learning and you will have more knowledge to pull from. Number 9, get the ball rolling. 1 minute at a time. Now, if you're producing nothing because you're having trouble focusing, and it happens to all of us, set a timer for 5 minutes. Focus on one task for those 5 minutes, and you may be surprised when that 5 minutes turns into an hour or more of productivity. Sometimes you just need to get the ball rolling. Number 10, warm things up. Cornell University found that employees made 44% more errors and their productivity declined by more than half when the temperature in their office was decreased to 68 degrees. So crank up the heater for more productivity so you're putting your energy toward being productive and not just staying warm. And number 11, stop the interruptions. You can turn your productivity way up by getting away from all the distractions. When you've absolutely got to focus on a task to get it done, close your email, ban your social media, turn off those beeps and pings on your smartphones, and then they tell you that you got another message, and get productive. Turning off the interruptions for just an hour can give you a tremendous productivity boost. And as I always tell my nieces and nephews, I guarantee you that there isn't one email or text that you've ever received in your life that was so earth-shattering that it had to be handled the second that you received it. So if it waits 20 minutes to a half hour, an hour, you'll still get it done. We're going to step away and take a break. When we come back, 9 questions every mentor should ask entrepreneurs if they don't ask themselves. You're listening to 100inchamberradio.com. The program is called Taking Care of Business.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With 3 great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Do you need a great sign to promote your business or organization? Signs by Crown of Flemington is your local professional sign shop and can provide you with high-quality banners, lawn signs, vehicle graphics, pop-up displays, window graphics, wall lettering, magnets, and much more. Signs by Crown can help you with the design, layout, creation, and installation of your signs. Signs by Crown is located inside Crown Trophy at 33 Rayville Avenue in Flemington. Remember, if you have something to say, say it with a sign from Signs by Crown.
Hi, this is Joe Peters at Weikert Realtors. If you are considering buying or selling a house this year, you have probably already gathered a lot of information. In a way, that is a little like taking a drink of water out of a fire hose in that you're no longer thirsty and at the same time are a little overwhelmed by all of the information that you have found. This is where I can be of help. As a local real estate market specialist, I can help you by understanding your objectives, showing you how to assemble that information that you've already found, supplementing it with highly accurate and timely data that I have access to, and assisting you in developing a strategy to turn your objectives into reality. Let's start by spending a few minutes over the telephone. Please give me a call at 908-238-0118 to get that process started. If you are considering buying or selling a house this year, we should be talking now. Once again, this is Joe Peters at Weikert Realtors at 908-238-0118.
And you could also visit my site at my first initial J, my last name, Peters.com.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HunterdonChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business and working overtime.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HunterdonChamberRadio.com. I'm Jim Gano, the owner of Crown Trophy here in Flemington, signs by Crown, Crown Custom Apparel, and Crown Promotional. Glad to help you with all of those needs and create a marketing plan that will make you look good. Well, before the break, I talked about 9 questions that every mentor should ask entrepreneurs. If they don't, ask yourself. In a mentorship relationship, questions are usually more important than answers. After all, how can you help prepare someone if you don't know exactly what they want to accomplish? That said, not all mentors are created equal, which is why when polled 9 entrepreneurs from the Young Entrepreneur Council regarding what they wish their mentors would have asked them when they first approached them, here I'm going to give you their answers. The first question that they wanted to be asked was, are you ready? Now, John Rampton, the host, said he wasn't ready at the time for the journey ahead, physically and most importantly, mentally. He could have guided me a little differently and helped me in ways that took him years to realize. 2 years after I met my mentor, he asked me this and really started helping me become ready for the journey I'm on right now. To become the best mentor, you have to really know everything about the person, know how they work, and how you can best help them become the person that they are meant to be. Why do you want this? One person said that, and it was Brian Honigman, who's from BrianHonigman.com, my mentor has been invaluable for my career thus far and has generously given me lots of great advice, but one question I wish he would have asked me was why I wanted to achieve the goals I had set for myself. He encouraged me to pursue my own venture, but never really asked me why I had made that choice. Through a good amount of soul searching, I feel that I was able to come to this answer on my own. However, having an understanding of my motivations before I embarked on this journey would have curbed a lot of my initial anxiety and might have led me to make better decisions. Also, having that conversation might have prompted him to share the reasons why he pursued entrepreneurship. Maybe the reason he never brought it up was because he felt I needed to reach those conclusions on my own. Beck Bamberger from BAM Communications said that his favorite question that he would have liked to have been asked was, how much time are you ready to devote to this relationship? Setting expectations for any relationship is a good idea. Mentors are often strapped for time more than others. And now I ask potential mentors what amount of time they are willing to give, as well as what amount of time they expect from me. Are we going to give each other an hour, a quarter with brief updates, or can I expect us to meet on the weekend for 5 hours once a month to review some critical planning? There's a big difference there. Luke Skirman from Niche.com said that his question that he would want to ask is, are you in it for the long haul? And if you fast forward 10, 15, or 20 years after starting the business, are you going to be content to still be driving the company? I think building something for the long haul that's sustainable is much more rewarding than trying to do a quick short-term flip. I've been running my business for over 12 years now, and I'm still loving it every day. And what are you most passionate about? This came from Renan Lockman from Play, P-L-E-Y. It's essential that you are not in your professional sector for the wrong reasons. Otherwise, you will end up unhappy. That being said, I wish my mentor had initially asked me, what are you really passionate about, and what do you find easiest to master? Passion and ease tend to be connected. This is not always because your passion comes naturally, but because you have spent hours upon hours doing research and self-teaching on the subject. As soon as you can answer this double-edged sword of a question, you'll begin to find other questions about the future, and your vision will not be as scary and impossible to answer. Furious Kitna from Amerisleep wanted to be asked, what wakes you up in the morning? For some, waking up and feeling motivated to do anything other than rest can be a struggle. Now, if my mentor had asked me what got me going in the morning, what fueled my passion to pursue my long-term goals, or what motivated me to do what I did every day, I would have been able to disclose my yearning to break free from a traditional career and work environment. By revealing my true inclinations, I would have developed the courage to become an entrepreneur sooner rather than later. From VenturePack, Randy Reyes wanted to be asked, what can you do that will most impact your business today? I think many times early on, we get so caught up in operations that we lose sight of the big picture and what matters most to our business. mentors help you reassess some of the core assumptions that you make by asking smart questions like, what will most impact your business? And it gives you a sense of how to prioritize the long list of tasks that you are constantly struggling to complete. Andy Stillman from SparkReel said he wished he was asked, how big should this company be? It's important to have a realistic view of the industry your company is in. Not every company is Uber, which is solving a fairly ubiquitous problem. If you are creating a company of a niche industry, it will limit your size. This isn't an inherent issue, but you must make sure to fundraise and scale appropriately. And finally, from another person, they said that the question they most wanted to be asked was, what's preventing you from accomplishing your goals? Now, this question forces you, the entrepreneur, to dig deep and to get past the excuses. And when I'm working with either fellow store owners or folks in other businesses, this is my number one question. What holds you back? What's preventing you from accomplishing your goals? The follow-up question, and of course, is why. It forces you to dig into specific reasons why you failed or made mistakes. This level of introspection allows you to learn from those mistakes and gives you a higher probability for reaching your current goals. So you can hire a mentor or two for two main reasons, clarity and for accountability. Small business optimism is posting an 8-year high in December. And the National Federation of Independent Business reported Tuesday morning that its Small Business Optimism Index for December rose 2.3 points from 98.1 in November to come in at 100.4. The December reading is the highest index reading since October of 2006. The four, quote, hard measures of the index rose sharply last month. The job creation component rose 4 points to 15%. The job openings component rose 1 point to 25%. The capital spending plans rose 4 points to 29%. And inventory investment plans rose 3 points to 5%. The largest increase in an index component was a 6-point gain in sales expectations, which rose from 14% to 20% of business owners surveyed. Only expectations for an improved economy fell, and that was by just 1 point to 12%. In December, small business owners identified their two most important problems as taxes, 27%, and government regulations and red tape as 22%. Poor sales and quality of labor both scored 11% as the third most important problem from small business owners. The NFIB's chief economist said the recovery of Main Street, which consists of about 5.5 million firms with fewer than 20 employees, can provide a good base for stronger economic growth, but any election euphoria that persists will soon be snuffed out if Congress cannot lay out a positive plan and make some progress on the top problems facing small business owners, including health insurance costs, uncertainty about economic policy, energy costs, the cost of regulations and red tape, and the tax code, which is too confiscatory, too complex, and changed too often. Prospects for progress are not that good, with President Obama still holding his veto pen. The NFIB reports that 25% of business owners currently have positions open that they are unable to fill, which is up a point from November, and that 43% said there were few or no qualified applicants for the open positions. Wages and earnings rose 2 points to a net negative reading of 15. Some 24% of small businesses reported that compensation costs rose, while 3% reported a drop. A seasonally adjusted total of 17% of employers plan to raise compensation costs in the next few months, up 2% from the November reading. So interesting. I actually participated in that survey. So it's interesting to see how the results came out. So that was all good. What else can we talk about here? The reason I'm hesitating to starting another story is I literally have to bug out of here at 1 o'clock today. Drive like a mat. Well, first I have to take a Xanax, which is something I'm looking forward to, except the drive afterwards. Having a little surgical procedure today on my leg. And so I have to get out of here at 1 so I can get down to Somerset Medical Center by 2 and have that procedure done. And you know, so a couple of the things that I want to talk about in the coming weeks, in addition to what we typically talk about, you know, we're going to talk about recruiting, we're going to talk about interviewing, we're going to talk about hiring. But what I really want from you folks who are listening is, what is it in your industry, and be specific about that, that is troubling you the most? For some, it could be, like we just mentioned, hiring of qualified talent. For others, it could be, once you hire qualified talent, how to keep them busy enough. Others, it's kind of like one of our store owners said he was cleaning the closets. And I asked what that meant. He goes, I'm just getting rid of all the bad customers. And, you know, I had a story on that last week, when to fire a customer. And, you know, so if you have bad customers that are just taking up too much of your time, what are you going to do about that? Others are looking at, you know, I've just lost a customer or an account and I'm trying to replace that. One of the things I'm tracking is how many new customers I get on a week-to-week basis. And this was based out of a town hall meeting we had up at our corporate office, where the numbers, when that question was posed, everybody came up with different numbers. Some people said they got 4, some people said 6, some people said 12. And it was interesting, when I did it for the first 5 months of last year, it was pretty much those same numbers. Any given week, you might have 4 new customers, you might have 6. In the first 5 months of last year, we had 205 new customers. So now I want to go back, look at all the data, and come up with a chart for the full year. How many new customers did we get? Figure out what the cost of the acquisition of obtaining those new customers was, and then figure out, did I lose any customers over the course of that year as well? So retention is key in our industry, and I want to make sure that we're covering that on all sides of the table. And then, like I said, any other topics you want to do, you can reach out to me on Facebook, on LinkedIn, on Twitter, and through email at trophyjim@yahoo.com. And I'd be glad to look into some of those so that we can report back to you and let you know what we're finding. In sports, college football has a national champion, and it's Ohio State after defeating Oregon on Monday night. One Ohio State player rushed for 4 touchdowns and over 260 yards in the game. In the NFL playoffs, the Green Bay Packers will play Seattle this weekend, and the Indianapolis Colts will play the New England Patriots this Sunday. The winner of each game moves on to the Super Bowl in Phoenix. In college basketball, what the hell has happened to Duke? Losing games recently, most recently to Miami. In the top 10 standings, Kentucky holds the top spot, followed by Virginia, Gonzaga, Duke, and Villanova. Louisville, Wisconsin, Utah, Kansas, and Arizona round out the top 10. Interesting news from the NCAA. It looks like that they could possibly be reinstating Joe Paterno's Penn State wins per a recent report. And that would make Joe Paterno Division I's all-time winningest coach again in football. After previously ending Penn State's postseason ban and giving the team back the scholarships that it lost, the NCAA could take another step and reinstate former coach Joe Paterno's vacated wins, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer. Paterno, who passed away in 2012, had all of his wins from 1998 through 2011 vacated. He had set the Division I record of 409 wins ahead of Grambling's Eddie Robinson, who had 408. However, the vacated wins brought his total down by 111 to 298 victories. Ever since the NCAA punishment came down and Paterno was essentially forced into retirement, many groups of Penn State fans have pushed for his wins to be reinstated. The punishment initially came after the University Commissioned Free Report said that Paterno did not do enough to report the sex abuse of former defensive coordinator Jerry Sandusky. The Paterno family commissioned its own report to examine the Free Report, which it claims was flawed. Internal NCAA emails showed that many of the organizations did not know whether they had the jurisdiction to impose the punishments that they did. Well, as always, it's been my pleasure joining you today, and I always end the show with some great advice I got from my father when I was just 6 years old that guides me in my personal and professional life every day. And maybe you can use it in your lives as well, when he said, "Never let it rest until your good is better and your better is best." I'm your host, Jim Gannot. This has been another edition of Taking Care of Business. So if you have ideas for upcoming programming topics or guests, email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, on Twitter at JimGannot83, or on Facebook. I'll talk to you again next week for another edition of Taking Care of Business. Make it a productive week, everybody. And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
In America, we believe in a future that is better than today. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has been working hard for their clients' futures, never taking a bailout, helping generations achieve dreams, buy homes, put their kids through college, retire how they want to. Today, Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you feel more confident about your financial future. Put the strength of a global financial leader to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton, Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your dreams and